Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Thursday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am Craig Fowler, and on this occasion I am joined once again by Joel Sked.
Hello.
And we are going to move on to the next in our list of top 12 countdowns of the best players at a specific position in the top flight right now. And now we're on to attacking midfielders. So if you listened to the last episode, you know that we've changed up a little bit this year. We, instead of splitting it into central midfielders and wide players, we've changed it into defensive slash central midfielders and then attacking midfielders. So this is the attacking midfielders. Before we get to the list, we should probably get to guys who we've not selected on the basis of what we've kind of termed them as, because we're also changing. So before, we used to have forwards, we would call them strikers. So we'd say the best strikers right now. So we've changed that name to forwards. So we can kind of fit in a few more guys that you can maybe, you can debate whether they're midfielders or forwards kind of thing. So we've gotten those. So
for instance, wingers.
Yeah, or wingers. So for instance, there's not going to be any Mohamed El-Younoussi in this list. There's not going to be any Glenn Middleton in this list. I don't know if we make it anyway, but he's an example. One that we just decided on at the very last minute, and the, probably the hardest one to call, there's going to be no Martin Boyle on this list. The way I could have looked at it, Joe, and I don't know whether you were the same, because you can maybe say that Ryan Kent is a forward because he always plays in a front three for Rangers. He plays fairly centrally. He doesn't play as a winger. He gets called a winger at times, but he doesn't really play as one. But for me, it was kind of a case of, right, can this guy and has this guy played through the central positions like a number nine? And Martin Boyle has, El-Younoussi has, Ryan Kent hasn't.
Yeah, that's a fair way to assess it, because I mean the three of them, well, they're not not identical, but they're similarities in position,
yeah,
and the way they play. But yeah, I think the fact is, and Boyle, he's and El-Younoussi as well, they have played striker quite regularly recently.
Yes, yes, right. Let's get to the also as well. I've limited myself to three players per team.
Oh, I did not do that.
All right, yeah. There's a couple of Rangers players I've disregarded. I've also thought as well, Scott Arfield. We should have had Scott Arfield in central midfielders.
We should have. Adam Thornton, the Rangers fan, he came back and said Arfield is a midfielder. Yeah, I've included him in my attacking midfielder. I'll just stick with my list. I've got a lot of Rangers players there. I've got a lot of Rangers players there. One of them I've chosen, but not for his Rangers performances. So that's obvious. It's going to be Scott Wright.
Yeah, I didn't choose Scott Wright.
So I've chosen him more because of his Aberdeen performances, and which we'll come on to talk about. But I think a lot of probably the players that you have included that I've maybe missed out, I would have probably included them if I did limit myself. But we'll see. And if a couple of players that I did look to speak about but just didn't make the cut, we can chat about them at the end.
Yeah, right. Let's get on to... I'm trying to change my mind again because I did have originally Martin Boyle in my 12th. I've had to change this quite late, so I've picked a player and now I've gone back at it. I've picked somebody else. Right, so my number 12, I've gone for, and I reckon he would be a lot higher up this list if he kind of had a better season, and I'll get into reasons why he's not. But I've gone at number 12, I've gone for Hibs, Jamie Murphy.
He did not even come into consideration for me.
Well, he bloody should have, Joel. He bloody should have. Jamie Murphy's still got a lot of really good qualities as an attacking midfielder in the Scottish Premiership. And I think...
That I don't doubt.
I think the reason why I wanted to have him in here is that he's a more interesting case to be than maybe somebody else. And it's to do with the fact that he's still really good at everything. He crosses the ball quite frequently. He's a fairly accurate crosser when he does it. He's good at running with the ball, both in terms of beating people and just kind of dragging the ball up the park. He's good at creating chances. He's good. He plays a number of through balls. He really doesn't give the ball away too often. The only really thing he's not very good at, and I think we saw this in the...
Staying fit.
Also in the League Cup semi against St Johnstone, his finishing maybe sometimes leaves a little bit to be desired. Certainly in terms of his kind of how much of his shots are on target. But I reckon fitness was a bit of an issue this year, but also as well that, especially after the signing of Jackson Irvine, I don't think he really fits into this Hibs team. And I'm not sure he's entirely fitted into it a lot this season. I think the best place to have Jamie Murphy is on the left of our front three. And he's not really been given... Hibs don't really play that. I don't think I really remember him playing a 4-3-3 at all this season, or even a 3-4-3. I think we've maybe only done that once or twice.
Yeah, and I agree.
I just think he's in a bad situation, but still a very good player.
Weirdly, I think he would have been a great squad player for Rangers.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised why they were so happy to just let him go.
Yeah, I really... So with Murphy, I really like him. I rate him. He's one of those players who I think is easy on the eyes. He's really just kind of nice to watch. I would like to see him put up more numbers in terms of just simple goals and assists. And I don't think he's quite reached that Hibs, mainly because the issues we've talked about is the lack of consistency in the team in terms of financial position, and lack of consistency when he's fit, because he's one of those players who can go both ways. I know he's predominantly right-footed, but he's a player who comes up against a fullback, and it must be a fucking nightmare for a fullback. For example, with Boyle, if you are playing against him out in the wide, you just know, right, okay, he's going to go down the wing, down my outside. Well, maybe he's probably got more to his arsenal now, but just this is a simplistic point. He's going to go down my outside, and it's just a case of having to deal with that pace, whereas Murphy, of course, doesn't have that pace, but he's just got that, he's got the drop of the shoulder, he's kind of just got that half yard up there where he can just move the ball very quickly, and he can go either way, which is always a nightmare for a defender. So yeah, I can see why he's in your list, but no, it's probably lack of consistency, both game time and position-wise, just didn't warrant a place on my top 12, considering the amount of players I had to leave off. I mean, he only started 13 league games.
Fair enough. Right, who's your number 12 then?
My number 12 is Chris Burke.
I have him in the list just a little bit higher, I think.
I actually, it was one of those where you're going through all the players from the teams and just putting together your long list, and you're thinking, Kilmarnock, I was bypassed them. But no, it wasn't until I was looking more into it. And Burke, again, is a player who doesn't look and doesn't play like he is. Is he 37 now?
Yeah, some ridiculous, yeah.
37 now. And the biggest thing for Chris Park for me is not like the fact that he's still performing yet at 37 years of age. It's the fact that he can do just a little bit of everything.
Yes.
He's a real talisman for Kamara. And you talk about Kyle Lafferty coming in and steering them away from the automatic relegation, and it looks like there's probably still going to be a playoff. But if it wasn't for Chris Burke, by the time Lafferty came in, Kelly could have already been cut adrift and have been really struggling to survive. Just because he's league-wise 8 goals and 3 assists, and he is just he does put up the numbers in terms of getting shots away, creating chances, dribbles, crosses. He is the all-round attacking midfielder that we are talking about on this list. And
yeah,
despite how poor Kelly have been, still think he has maybe not the best season just because of those around him, but he still had a very productive season. And again, he probably could warrant be further up, but I just think there are there's good quality above him.
I've actually got him in the top 10, so I'll speak about him when I come to him.
Mm-hmm.
If I limited myself to
3 players from Rangers instead of about 73, he would have reached the top 10.
My number 11 is St Johnstone's David Wotherspoon.
I have him at I have him very close. So I have him at number 10. So happy to speak about him now.
Wotherspoon is somebody that I've always kind of rooted for. Somebody that I've always enjoyed playing. Somebody who I've always kind of thought was
always enjoyed playing.
Always enjoyed watching playing. Okay. Sorry. Always enjoyed him playing. Always enjoyed him playing football. I enjoyed it.
The way he said it, it could go down. You enjoy playing against them, or are you playing them on a computer game?
I think against any Scottish footballer, I would not enjoy playing against them. Even jobbers in League Two, I would hate it. It'd be horrible. We absolutely ripped the fuck out of. Constantly.
No, there's one player. One ex SPFL player who you enjoy playing against, just because it would be good for your self esteem, and that's Mr. Joel Pereira.
Yes. 40 goals on score that season. David Wotherspoon, somebody that's always been a kind of very creative player, somebody whose versatility as well, somebody who I think for a lot of his career was seen his natural position as a number 8, but I think he's kind of developed into a more kind of better player, somebody who's either at the left of a 4, or as he's played this season, I think he's had a really good campaign on the left of a front 3, or playing as a number 10 behind 2 strikers. I think we're talking about consistency. That's something that maybe marks Wotherspoon down, is that, I mean, we're talking about attacking midfielders. Consistency is going to be a word that maybe comes up quite a lot, but I think especially him, I don't think Wotherspoon really goes through, well, maybe earlier in his career, but I think this season he just kind of has games where he just doesn't seem to be on it, but he'll be fine the next week and they would have played well the week after. He just seems to be kind of developed at one of those guys that's a bit more mercurial, but at the same time, he's still, that's a word I would hesitate to use, because he does a lot of kind of good work off the ball. He's considered how far well he plays forward. He does a great job at winning the ball back for his team. I had him ranking 4th for recoveries out of all the players I looked at. And considering a lot of those guys are going to be kind of like Celtic and Rangers players who are, you know, pressuring the opposition high up the park, and also guys who kind of play a wee bit further back a lot of this campaign. So, you know, so for instance, like if Ross Callaghan was to be in your list, he's got high for recoveries, but he's played quite a lot in the centre of the park. He's not always been a number 10, but as well, it's been pretty much for this entire campaign, it's played in some fashion in a number 10 role. So to do that is quite impressive. He also gets fouled quite a lot, and then he often takes the set pieces himself, which is quite a good trick to have. There were some other things about him. His goal threat seemed to have really dried up this season. I think he might only have 1 or 2. His shooting's been terrible. his crossing's not been too good this season as well. He's kind of taken a dip at a number of things that in past would have thought that David Wotherspoon was quite good at, and I'm sure he has ranked quite good at, but he still managed to have a really good season. And I still think he deserves to be in the list. So yeah, my number 11.
Yeah, he was always going to be on my list. He's one of my I tweeted about this on Sunday when watching the St Johnstone semi-final. I just never thought, partly because of his Hibs past, and just partly because he's been a target of some boo boys from St. Johnstone, and you talked about that a lot, lacking consistency. He just never, it was never a player that I thought I would get round to openly admitting that I really enjoy watching, but I do. He's just so easy on the eye. Love the spaces he picks up, especially on the kind of the half space on the left hand side. So just behind the midfield, in between the fullback and centre back. St. Johnstone, I think, have been a big threat down the left hand side. He's built partnerships with, well, it's Buffer Tanzer. They are a good relationship, and then you've got kind of Chris Kane stretching play, whether it's Melamed that plays, May that plays, his trick of being able to chop, kind of fade, do a one way, cut back inside, chop a defender, is really, really good. You mentioned about consistency. Kind of want to talk about that. My concern with Witherspoon is inconsistency is not so much his consistency from game to game, it's actually within a game. I think he can go through spells where he's in control of that game, but it doesn't last for as long as other players on his pitch it should for his quality. I remember, is it Hamilton early on in the season, quite early in the first half of the season, I think it was, he put in this first half performance was absolutely incredible. It was at New Douglas, and then barely seen him after halftime. And I think he does have that tendency to kind of just drift out or drop out of games, whether that's he's targeted more, or the St. John's kids can't get the ball to him. But he doesn't dominate games for as long spells.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair as well. Right, moving on to
my 11. Witherspoon was my 10.
Yeah, so moving on to your number 11.
Number 11, I was kind of weighing up. He probably should be my 12. I was weighing up whether to include him, and that was Scott Wright. He is someone who I've probably included just because I enjoy watching him. I really enjoyed watching him for Aberdeen earlier this season. Really enjoyed, I think, it was no surprise that Aberdeen were at their best when both him and Hedges were playing. I really enjoyed when, well, it was Hedges playing off the right, or the both of them as a kind of dual tens behind a striker, behind Cosgrove. I think they created a real nice balance. And Scott Wright is someone who I just really enjoy, a midfielder who will pick up balls centrally and dribble. He'll do that. He'll look to pass. He'll create chances. And he can understand why Steven Gerrard seen him. Obviously, he's a domestic player, so that helps European-wise, but you can see why he would like him to play in the system that he plays. He's gone to Rangers. He's someone who they've signed, obviously, in January to kind of integrate him going forward into next season, but I think he's had a positive enough impression. He's made a positive enough impression on Rangers fans to think that he could actually do something, maybe do something a bit more than Greg Stewart. And hope he doesn't go the same way Greg Stewart is. That it's like Stewart and Wright. You want to see these players week in week out in Scotland. But Wright is, and for his Aberdeen performances where they were at times thrilling. And again, he's similar to Witherspoon. He's just the type of player when you watch a game. You know, I mean, Aberdeen mostly are hard to watch, certainly under McInnes. He made them at least interesting and fun to watch, which is no small feat.
So I don't have Wright. Would I have had him whether I didn't have a limit of three players from each club? Maybe, but I'm not too sure. It's still just as great as he was to watch earlier this season. I've always really enjoyed watching Scott Wright, even in the days when he was like, you know, just coming off the bench for Aberdeen or playing for Dundee.
I think I know what you're about to say, and I'll admit he should do more.
No, I mean, like, I've always enjoyed watching him, but no, what I'm going to say is that I just think because he was good for Aberdeen from like late August to January, and also missed about a month or so through injury, for the kind of the battle to make this top 12, that's just not kind of big enough for me, because for about two or three years before then, he's kind of looked upon somebody who you kind of thought would end up playing for Air United, or Queen of the South or something for most of his career. And he's really kind of turned himself into like a marquee kind of player this season. And since going to Rangers, had some opportunities, but not too much and not enough to really kind of keep him in the top 12 for me.
He's started one more game than Jamie Murphy.
But Jamie Murphy's got the history, Joe. That's the kind of thing.
I know.
Scott Wright's history is of being shit. and I've only got evidence of
inconsistent.
His first season he was good, and then he fell off a cliff, and he continued falling off that cliff for about 2 years. At least 2 years, maybe even three. So yeah, Jamie Murphy's got the back catalogue. Scott Wright does not. Right, my number 10. If you're arguing about this one, you're gonna fucking love this. My number 10 is Matty Kennedy of Aberdeen.
Matty Kennedy was on my long list, and
another player who's not had a good season. But right, so look at it this way: we've both got David Witherspoon. Before this campaign, would you have had Matty Kennedy above David Witherspoon? I'm going to go with yes. I think it's yes. I think the answer should definitely be yes.
Yeah. I was going back to last season, and yes, absolutely. Matty Kennedy was when he was at St. John's, one of the players you wanted to sign. Again, this is
the problem with Kennedy this season is that he's been playing as wing back quite a lot. He's not a wing back.
This is an appropriate time to bring up the Aberdeen fan that tweeted us about. Yeah. I was every time I seen it, I was like, I can't be, but I'm too tired to reply. But it was I can kind of understand where he came from. I thought your reply was fine. For me, I'll admit, it's like Aberdeen, I found Aberdeen players hard to pick just because they have just found Aberdeen a real struggle, a real grind. And I think it was they've probably finished fourth and done what they've done just because they kind of ground out on a more collective rather than individualistic kind of basis.
I also think as well, he was saying like before, obviously it's 6 points now, but there were only three behind Hibs. And should Jack Ross be questions asked about Jack Ross? I think questions should definitely be asked about Jack Ross that they're only going to finish 6 points ahead of Aberdeen, maybe even three, depending on what happens this weekend. Because I think that Hibs, especially in the second half of the campaign, are a much better squad than Aberdeen's. I think the reason why Hibs have only finished so... I think Hibs should have finished well ahead of them. And the reason why is that, for whatever reason, Jack Ross and this Hibs team have been unable to get themselves up for a lot of routine games at home that they really should have won. They've dropped a ridiculous amount of points at Easter Road this season. If they hadn't done that, then they could have been putting pressure on Celtic. And judging by the way they play away from home, maybe they should have been.
Maybe there is
a sense of underachievement maybe at Hibs this season. Obviously, that will completely go out the window if they win the Scottish Cup and nobody will give a fuck. But I think it's not something that I think has really been a problem throughout Ross's career, as far as I'm aware. But for whatever reason, this season, they dropped a lot of points at home that they really shouldn't have done. But I think they have the better team and I think they have better players.
Yeah, so the players they have, I think, on an individual basis are more eye-catching. But yeah. Matty Kennedy, is someone I really like, and someone I think Stephen Glass can, if depending on how he's going to play, if he can get the best out of, if he can get Matty Kennedy in a position when he's got impact games, he's got a big match winning player there.
Yeah, the occasions where he has been able to play in a more advanced position, I think, has been his best performances of the season, because he's just being a wing back doesn't suit him. That being said. And this played a lot into my factor because I was blown away by this. These are all the stats where Matty Kennedy ranks in the top five of all the guys that I looked at. So I looked at 30 players. Goals per 90, shooting percentage, crosses per 90, crossing percentage, dribbles per 90, progressive runs, attacking duels won, attacking duel percentage.
Impressive.
Top five for all of them. Especially crosses, it's like to be second in crosses per 90 and have a second best crossing percentage. That's just great. Like that's doing it very often and being very good at it. He's one thing that kind of really kind of hampered him. I might have even had him on my list, but he's not created a lot of chances. But it was the same for Johnny Hayes. I think it wasn't even that great for Ryan Hedges. And I think it's just been hard to create chances for this Aberdeen team this season.
Yeah, I think that is fair. Just really had like Cosgrove sometimes. I just found him he could be ponderous.
He really is
an attacking midfielder. You don't want the striker you're aiming at to be ponderous.
Yeah, he had one foot at the door. Callum Hendry's been all right. Hornby's been rubbish. Canberry's been pretty rubbish as well. Watkins was decent enough, but didn't play very often. So yeah, they've not had the problems to seek an attack this year, and I think that's hampered some of the attacking midfielders. And I want to showed up well, and I nearly stuck with the top 12. That would have been intrigued to see that. Niall McGinn hasn't had as bad a season, I think, as advertised. Because despite what I said,
with McGinn, I've seen kind of looking at the stats, and yeah, I was more impressed with the stats than I've been off him. And I think it's the eye test. I don't think he's had a great season.
Glass came in
that he's looked a bit better.
And the problem with McGinn compared to the other guys, the other kind of three attacking midfielder from Aberdeen who would come in consideration for this list, is that McGinn, when he's not played well, kind of looks like he can't be arsed most of the time.
There's a couple of games I've tuned into watched with Aberdeen where McGinn has just been anonymous. It's not like what he's trying to do is being poor. It's just that he's not done anything. Going back to Kennedy, they're just looking on the transfer market and they're just looking at the... He's played 36 matches and they've looked at the positions he's played. He's played 7 different positions. So I think he's played... So I would probably say 6 because they've got him down as playing a centre midfield once and I don't think that's the case. So basically left wing back, right back, right wing back, left wing, right wing, centre forward, attacking mid.
It's not conducive. It's not really conducive to good play, consistent play across the season. Right, you've got Witherspoon as your number 10. My number 9 is Chris Burke. So I'm going to do it again, as I've done with the last one. So I'm going to go again. Top 5 statistics of all the players I looked at where Chris Burke ranks in the top 5. Goals per 90, shooting percentage, crosses per 90, he's number 1 for that. Dribbles per 90 is 4th, dribble percentage is 2nd. Attacking duels 1, 5th. Attacking duel percentage 3rd. And he also barely ever gives the ball away as well for a winger. So, yeah, if you're thinking about Burke, maybe why he shouldn't be on the list is because I think a lot this season he's dropped out of the team, gone to the bench, but maybe that is just to save his legs because he is 37. Because when he's on the park, he does play very well.
Just when you were reading off the stats, just on that, I was looking at I got a lot of my stats for him, but who scored. And he was... top 20 out of the whole league. So not just wingers, just top 20 of the whole league for, I think, goals, assists, shots per game, key passes, dribbles, crosses.
Yeah, he's still very good. 37.
But that is one where when you actually watch, like sometimes when you look at stats, it can surprise you, but there's one where he is someone where you go, yeah, I get that because... a lot of things, especially when he plays and when Lafferty wasn't there, a lot of things just kind of go towards him at Kelly because they don't have a consistent player in the final third, that he is the most reliable and best quality in the final third. You can make the argument for Greg Kelly as well.
Right, who's your number 9?
So obviously my ratings are going to be skewed because I've got more Rangers players. So yours, the names I'm going to say are probably bumped up 2 or 3 places for you. But my number 9 is Ryan Hedges.
Ryan Hedges. I've got Hedges number 8, so we can just both talk about him now.
Go. Hedges.
Somebody who's a bit more, so I've been very stat heavy a bit so far, but Hedges is more a kind of eye test player for me. I really enjoy watching him play. I enjoyed watching him play last season. I'm pretty sure that we both had him. At least I definitely had him in the top 12, sneaking in there, I think, at either 12 or 11. And that was after he'd kind of fallen out the Aberdeen team. But I thought, I liked him as a player. I liked his ability to... The fact that he was quick, the fact that he could beat players, he had a really nice touch, he could score goals. He was just a good player to watch, and I'm surprised that McInnes didn't really use him. And even at the start of this season, I think it was... Was it the third or fourth game? It was that awful match against St Johnstone. Where he came off the bench and
Was out at McDermott's.
Yeah, scored the goal. It was a deflection.
Second game of the season.
I think but if you include their European games, I think I think it was maybe their fourth, and he'd been on the bench and he'd obviously fallen out of the team the season prior, and it was looking like he was going to do the same. McInnes threw him on in that game. While the goal was a bit of a fluke, he kind of made it happen by being a bit the only player in the Aberdeen team who was happy to get the ball and run at the opposition. And that then kind of led to the goal. And from there, he never really looked back. He was a perfect fit for the kind of the two number 10 spots, his ability to do everything that I mentioned. And also as well, just kind of really good technical footballer as well. Somebody could link seamlessly with those around him. He dovetailed very well with Scott Wright. That and them three and Watkins together, I thought, had the makings of a really good front three. And it's a shame that it only really lasted for 2 months, because they were great to watch together. You can maybe say they were lacking an out-and-out goal scorer, but I think you've got enough there that had they played over the campaign together, because Hedges, of course, got a big injury as well, and were right leaving for Aberdeen. Had they played together over the course of the campaign, while you're not going to get any of those guys scoring 20 goals, I think they could have had 30 between them. And then that's enough to probably fire you to third place. And yeah, he's just... I'm interested to see what will come of him next season, depending on what Glass wants. Will he go back to just being a winger? Will he go fully number 10? It'll be interesting to find out.
Weirdly, I quite liked him when he played kind of more... It was probably right midfielder, but kind of right wing back. I quite liked him in that position. Probably liked him in that position more than I did Matty Kennedy. Just because when he played on the right, and he was just cutting in. So he was just cutting in and becoming like a kind of auxiliary 10 when he moved forward. But he's a player who I think made Aberdeen a better team collectively, and a better team to watch. You look at most of his start, like his big run of games, there was when Aberdeen, I think, went 14 games unbeaten. Not 14 games, one loss in 14. And he was prominent. Prominent in that, and like I said, he's eye test, but he's really, really good to watch. I think there's a lot there to work with. He's someone who can like come in onto his left foot. He can shoot. He can play those reverse passes. He can combine. He's got a lot going for him.
Okay, who's your number eight?
My number eight, before my list gets very boring, is. Is Jamie McGrath.
He's my number seven. So we're matching up here. Then my list is going to get very boring.
Jamie McGrath is... talked about Chris Burke as an all-rounder, but he is just a talisman for St Mirren. Because we did talk about having him as a centre midfielder or attacking midfielder, and you can understand why teams have been linked with him already. He was a January arrival last season, and initially thought there's a player there, just inconsistent. But I think the longer he's been at St Mirren, the better he's got, a bit more. The more games he's been able to put together, performances he's been able to put together, he's the type of player who. Is great because he's quite combative. He wins fouls, which is it's always good for in a way for an attacking midfielder. He creates chances, scored 10 goals, albeit seven of those are from the penalty spots.
So he's have to tuck them away.
So have to tuck them away. He's a good dribbler. He can cross and he can pass. He can do a bit of everything, and his versatility is another huge positive.
We support a team that's barely had a reliable penalty taker since Andrus Velička, so we can certainly attest to the need for absolutely. For a good penalty taker. The penalties do skew it a bit, but it's still impressive that of all the players, including all the Old Firm guys, he is number one for goals per 90 minutes. And
where do you think his best position is?
I think it probably is a number 10. Rather than, because he often plays as an eight.
Yeah.
Well, he's done both this season, because St Mirren have kind of tinkered with their formation quite a lot. So they've had some games where they've had Jake Delhaize and Ethan Erehon as a midfield two with McGrath ahead of them. They've also had it, what they've done a bit more recently, is Jake Delhaize as a defensive, like designated defensive midfielder with Erehon and McGrath as a two, with McGrath giving a bit more freedom to go forward. But I do think that he's probably just a little bit more suited to another 10. The reason for that is because one kind of aspect of his game that he maybe misses a little bit in terms is kind of doing a lot of running with the ball and kind of progressing the ball up the park. And I think as a number eight, it's kind of handy to have that as a kind of real skill. As a number 10, it doesn't really matter as much. And because he doesn't necessarily do that as often as maybe you would maybe want him to, then I think it kind of suits him more to just be that kind of number 10. And plus his shooting ability, you want him kind of closer to goal.
Yeah. I think it's testament that he started this season mainly as a winger, and Jim Goodwin he kind of tinkered with his side after, especially they went on that run, I think September, October time, where they were just losing every game, that he tinkered with his side, tweaked it, and he was moved in the centre and almost given more responsibility.
Yeah.
And I think he's someone who's picked up on that.
Right, so he was my number seven as well. So who's your number seven? It's when your list gets boring. Well, both the list gets boring because mine is boring for this point forward as well.
My number seven is Scott Arfield. So the reason he's kind of just middling is because what we've talked about, the fact that I know you don't have him on your list, is that we weren't sure if he was a centre midfielder or attacking midfielder.
Judge him as an attacking midfielder would maybe even put him outside of the list. Because if he was playing as a number 10 for a lot of clubs in this country, I don't think he'd look anywhere near as good as he does for Rangers.
Yeah, solely as an attacking midfielder, he doesn't have a lot of qualities.
His only really skill as an attacking midfielder is that he's a really good goal threat.
Yes, that's it. That's it. He is a really good vertical player. And I think, you can't underestimate that at Rangers when they are playing against packed defences. And sometimes when they've struggled, kind of not so much recently, but times where they struggled to break teams down, he and Gerrard's looked to change up, whether he's made changes for the following week game or coming off the bench. Scott Arfield is someone you look to because he offers that verticality where he'll want to run beyond and run. Rangers have got a lot of players who want the ball, want to come short for the ball and want to run with the ball. Scott Arfield's happy not looking for the ball and running beyond without the ball, which is massive because it kind of creates space, it stretches the game and also creates chaos as well, because defenders don't like kind of players putting them off or running beyond them. The fact that he's got, out of all midfielders, is the most touches per game in the opposition box. Kind of says a lot. 5 assists as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've pretty much said all there is. We had him in the wrong position.
Yeah.
He's a number 8. Right, on to my number 6. So, okay, this is when I go Old Firm. Exclusive. I did throw a wrinkle in. When I had Boyle on my list, I had Boyle at number 2. So I was ready to make it a bit more interesting, but then I had to remove Boyle, and then it just became, for that point forward, it just became all Celtic Rangers.
Yeah, so Boyle would have I was hanging back with Boyle until we really fully decided, and Boyle, he would have had to be at least top 3.
Yeah, just an incredible season, an incredible development in his career, really, for the man who was swapped for Alex Harris. And I don't even think he was he even that young, at the time? I don't think he was.
24, maybe?
Yeah, it's just wild. It's absolutely crazy. He's like your career development, but fair play to the guy. Right, so anyway, I don't have Martin Boyle, so we should probably stop talking about him. And number 6, I have, and this is my... I really don't know how happy I'm about this one. There's 2 I'm really not happy about, and I'm going to get some stick, especially since Rangers fans... Rangers fans have turned into Celtic fans. Now that they're top of the pile, any slight on their player, and they fucking come at you, calling you a clown, calling you a weapon, just because. What was that clown of weapon? Because I had Christopher Ayer above Philip Hollander. One place as well.
I think I've got one decision that might irk them, but just because I really like this player.
So here's the first one that I'm going to irk them with. At number 6, I have Yanis Hadji.
Oh,
see,
yeah, that is good article. I thought my Yanis Hadji one was good article, but no, that's good article.
I mean, Hadji's very good. the reason Hadji is number right, should I have him? There's one place I'm not really prepared to put him any higher than fifth in my list, but it's the guy I've got ahead of him that really is not sitting well with me, and I can happily swap these about. But I'm going to go with Hadji six because of the fact that the player ahead of him, I really like the kind of work he does off the ball, and I like the fact that whenever he's not really contributing much to the game in attacking sense, you know he's there and he's still impacted the game and he still gives something for opponents to think about. I think Hadji sometimes can just... Consistency is really a problem with Hadji, and I think sometimes he can just completely drift out of matches and really not do much at all. He is, incredibly, I didn't realise this until this week, I don't know why, but I thought he was in his mid-20s. He's only 22. He was 21 at the start of the season. So, I mean, those are things that he will improve on, you would think. And with the other things he does well, I mean, he takes a lot of kind of shots from distance when he maybe shouldn't have done. Now, there's a player we're going to get to very soon who definitely does that too often, but I'll defend that when it comes to it. But he's somebody, he's still a very creative player, somebody who could score goals, somebody who could create goals, and just a really kind of good number 10. And I would also like to see him, like to see what he looks like as a proper number 10, not as part of a kind of double pivot number 10 that Rangers have going on, just to see what he'd be like in that kind of lone central position where a lot of the responsibility is on you. Because I think I have a feeling he'd maybe be better at that.
Okay. I've got a wee bit higher.
Okay, right. Pray for my mentions. He's your number six.
So this is probably the main one I deliberated over, and I'm still deliberating over. Number six is Joe Aribo.
Oh, right. I've got him higher. Not ridiculously higher, but higher.
Joe Aribo is someone, again, he is someone I like a lot, but he is a player who leaves me wanting more.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I think between the two of them, I mean, there's a chance I just mixed up my list as well, just so it was the Celtic guy did like two Rangers guys in a row. But Aribo, I think when it comes to him and Hadji, it's hard to kind of separate them too much. And the reason I went for Aribo higher is because I prefer watching Aribo to Hadji. I'm an Aribo guy.
I enjoy watching them both. But with Aribo, with Hadji, I think he is, I know you mentioned his age, I think he is probably more complete at the moment. He's got many more levels to go. And I know Aribo is 24, he's turning 25 this year actually. But there's always this when I'm watching, it's like you should be dominating games in the Scottish Premiership. You should be scoring just short of 10 goals a season. You should be like 7 in the league. You should be scoring more. I mean, the game, what was the game? Dundee United, 4-1 run against Dundee United. He was just genuine class that game where you'd get the ball, confidence, he would create space for create space for himself with the ball, he would create space for teammates. He was such a danger in front of goal, scored an absolute cracker. And it was just this real, when he got into the final third, there was just this real positivity and kind of determination to actually do something with it. Whereas at times, I feel what sometimes he gets, and I understand Rangers fans, especially Rangers fans who watch him very closely, especially with a tactical sense, will come back and say he perhaps does this and this off the ball, or his passing opens up different passing lanes or stuff like that. But just on the, straightforward is that there's games where he should play that killer ball. He should score that goal. He should get the ball and just, you know what? Basically, it's like, you know what? Fuck you. Whoever is his opponent, I'm just gonna take you for a ride for 90 minutes. That's what he should be doing, and that's why I've got him slightly down. But again, he's. I mean, there's a lot of players on this list I enjoy watching. He is definitely one of them.
Right. So. My number five is Ryan Christie. And I could have had him sixth.
So my kind of four, five, and six were how I were kind of deliberation. I've got Christie just slightly higher.
Right.
So what number was this, number five?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got one place higher. I just but you talked about Christie.
Oh, we're at the number five spot, but I feel like I should talk about why he's only five, because I'm pretty sure I had him like number one last season.
Yeah, he's frustrating.
The fuck no half. Ryan Christie, he must be about the like for such an elite player, he must be like the most. Sorry, he must be the least efficient elite player in the Scottish Premiership this season. The amount of shots he takes for distance, that and I think he scored like twice. The fact that he's crossing this season has been rubbish. He's dribbling, trying to go past opponents, he's been rubbish at that. He's lost the, like he tries to do a lot with the ball, so he loses it a lot. The saving grace for him is that he works so tremendously hard off the ball, and he's a very good technical player. But he's had a horrible campaign for his standards. I mean, you'd still love him if he played for, well, pretty much anybody else other than Celtic or Rangers. But at that standard that he has to be at, he has had a dreadful campaign. He's definitely had a worse campaign than Hadji. The only reason I put my head of Hadji in my list is that it's just kind of, again, it's the bigger, more credit in the bank, a bigger sample size. The fact that even this season, despite the fact he's not had a very good season for Celtic, he's had a very good season for Scotland, also went into my thinking as well. But obviously we know that Christie's a very good player. It's just a bewilderingly bad campaign. And for me, him and Callum McGregor are almost the poster boys for how badly Celtic have coached their players this season.
Yeah, I get it. I still think, so Celtic fans, you may disagree, you've kind of got to have him in your team. And I know that's probably lessened because of the rise of David Turnbull. But you look at Christie, and I just think he is just a class act. And I do think this is just a blip. This season's a blip. And again, going by his standard, because you look at someone who's in all competitions, if he scores on the last day of the season, he's still a double-double in terms of goals and assists, which is still pretty productive for any attacking midfielder, even if play for Rangers and Celtic. But yeah, similar to Aribo, he's just like wanting a bit more. The reason he's a wee bit higher is just because, like I said, he's got that credit in the bank.
Right. So that was my number five. Who's your number five?
Well, this is, again, probably a harsh decision. I even had about six at one point, was James Forrest.
I've got him higher. Again.
But the only...
It's been similar whenever we do this. I always kind of go more... I always kind of lean more on kind of credit in the bank, sample size, previous seasons kind of thing. Yeah, because Forrest has obviously missed a lot of the season.
That's it. James Forrest has missed a lot of the season. You know, in a way, you could argue that he could easily be two or one, just because his... without Forrest, it's kind of just showing how Celtic. I know they had their struggles with Forrest, but you can't tell you they missed him massively.
Yeah,
massively,
undoubtedly. And the fact that they never replaced him all season again goes to how badly Celtic have managed their squad this campaign. Never even brought in another right winger at any point. Pretty much missed the entire campaign. I think what we've seen from him, the flashes, he still looks like the player he was last year. And the player he was last year was somebody that could do everything. You know, score loads of goals. Somebody who never had the final ball, who managed to become suddenly very good at crossing the ball. Somebody who's great at running with it. Somebody who works well, who works hard defensively. Barely gives the ball away. Probably the best player in the league. Him and Boyle, best player in the league at beating opponents one-on-one. Just a terrific all-round attacking midfielder. Thought of as a winger, but he's just become so much more than that in the last two, three seasons. The only kind of knock on Forrest I would always give is that he just randomly has games where he just doesn't show up at all. Like the 2019 Scottish Cup final being the prime example of that, the game against Hearts, where Hearts fans say Aaron Hickey had them in his back pocket. Aaron Hickey didn't really have to do anything. Forrest just wasn't really interested in getting involved. And he just, from time to time, it doesn't matter the occasion. It could be a big game. It could be a team against nobody. He just goes missing for a lot of it. And it's just a bit bizarre. It doesn't happen very often, you know, as you can see by just the kind of raw numbers. But it's something that's always, I've found a bit perplexing about Forrest the last couple of years. But I've basically, my selection for Forrest, I've got him higher. It's a leap of faith. Like that he's just as good as he was last year, and he's not going to have adverse effects over this injury. This could easily make me look stupid if he comes back next year and he's lost a yard and he's just not quite the same player, because he is about 30 now as well.
He turns 30 in July.
Yeah, so it's not a very good time to have a long-term injury.
So just looking at it, he started 12 games this season. Celtic lost once. One of those four games he started. He's played 16 times this season, and they've only lost that Rangers game.
He didn't have a good game, but I mean Rangers, Steven Gerrard.
And he just came back from he'd come back from an ankle injury, and he was out the Aberdeen game before it, I think.
Yeah, he was out a couple of games before that. He did. Tightness in his back and his hamstrings kind of thing. I think that's just kind of inactivity for so long. I'm still gonna bet that he's gonna be very, very good next year.
One thing we should say with these top 12, we've got into the top six. For me, 3 to 6, interchangeable. There's like minuscule. A minuscule difference. If someone came back to me and was like, Joe, absolutely nothing. He should be up off him. I was like, yeah, that's fair. I'm not going to argue about that.
Yeah, 6 to 3 for me were interchangeable.
So my number four was Ryan Christie, but we've talked about him.
Right, your number four is Ryan Christie. My number four was Joe Rebo. My number four was Joe Rebo. Your number four was Ryan Christie. My number three was James Forrest. Your number three?
Yanis Hadji.
Right, so we both got the same number two, I'm going to presume. David Turnbull.
Yes.
Yes. David Turnbull's just magic, eh?
So
pleased that he went to Celtic, even after being a year out of the side. Didn't look particularly great in Motherwell at the start. He looked decent enough. But you didn't think that, oh, he's going to go to Celtic, he's going to rip it up. And obviously Lennon took ages to give him a fucking chance. And it was just great to see him getting the chance and then just being brilliant every single week. Up until kind of recently, where he's fallen off a bit. But I think that's just to do with the malaise at Celtic in general.
It is very rare that you find a player who plays for one of the provincial clubs where Celtic or Rangers have signed him, you think, yes, you can build a team around him.
Yeah.
But I think you can build a team around David Turnbull. His intelligence, his vision is just... it's just incredible. And I really, as a Scottish football fan, keen to see what he'd do with a competent Celtic team.
Yes.
Like kind of give him the keys to the midfield of a competent Celtic team with a competent manager, a competent board who make competent decisions.
The best in the league at shot assists, well, the best of all the players, all the attacking midfielders at shot assists, yeah. Second for through balls, second for shots attempted. Takes a lot of shots for distance, but it's actually shoot percentage is just pretty decent. it's not like, is it Callum McGregor that's got like a terrible percentage for this season of shots because he shoots for outside the box all the time and barely any of them are on target. But Turnbull, even though he shoots for distance, tends to at least make the goalie work. And just such a creative
tour de force.
Yes.
Turnbull's game that I really enjoy is his ability to drop a pass over the fence. Just as like see a player making that run again, like seeing what he would have been able to do with Forrest over a long period of time. Forrest running in off that right hand side. It could had the kind of promise to be devastating, and he just sees passes way before others and way before anyone can react, and it's just great to see him. Really looking forward to for his integration into the Scotland team.
Right, number one.
Ryan Kent.
Yes.
That was an easy, that was genuinely an easy decision. I just wrote Ryan Kent one number one, and then stressed over the rest.
I said that Forrest and well, in terms of actually beating players, Forrest and Boyle, or maybe
I think they beat players in a specific way.
Yeah, they're probably best at taking on a fullback and beating that fullback.
Yeah.
Ryan Kent is so, but when you're talking about running with the football, Ryan Kent's maybe the best at running with the football. And the way that he can just slalom his body around the park, like he doesn't run in straight lines.
Yeah.
He runs in a curve.
He's the complete opposite to it, is Ollie Burke.
yes.
Ollie Burke just runs in straight lines, whereas Ryan Kent actually knows how to turn.
And turn all the time. Like, and he just bends himself around defenders all the time. Like, the runs he makes off the ball as well are so impressive.
Ollie Burke's ankles are made of concrete and Kent's are like flubber.
Yes, very well put. Yeah, exceptional talent. Nominated for Player of the Year this campaign. Deservedly so. And also as well, like, something else that really stuck out for me. For somebody who plays as a left-sided of a front three, of all the kind of players I looked at, which includes guys who could just be a bit more safer with the ball, he was fourth overall in terms of how few times he gives the ball away. And I was like, that's mental. Because, like, these guys are supposed to give the ball away. Guys like him are supposed to, because they're supposed to try and make stuff happen. It's not always going to come off. Just means that when he tries to make things happen, it just happens. It doesn't go the opposition. It just occurs.
With Ken is, the attacking point I was going to make, but with Ken, you have to kind of credit his off. Before we get to that, but Ken, I think he did have a dip during the season, but it was like a very small dip, and he bookended it with two very large books of just with just productivity and being such an asset to Rangers. But with Kent off the ball, I think he does a great job as well. I think he's developed that mean streak, and I don't think you could play for Steven Gerrard without working your arse off and doing what you need to off the ball. You think, okay, Kent could maybe get a bit of leeway, but I don't think he takes that. I think he works. He works for the team with the ball and without it. You think he could? He's the type of player that could be greedy, but he really isn't. He creates chances. He scores goals himself. Again, he is the type of player who should be scoring at least 10 goals and making 10 assists a season. And he's done that. Because last season there was a big debate about his lack of assists and his lack of numbers. He's done that, and he's put the enjoyment you get watching him kind of into action. So I always compared him to Barry McKay. There was something about Barry McKay about him, and that mind seeing that video when McKay played probably his best season for Rangers, where he created all these chances that they just squandered, and you just think you could have finished with like 15 assists, but you're playing with dumplings, and you got that feeling that sometimes with Kent, where he was getting into great positions. He was doing so much, but this season he's just gone up another level.
Right, so here's our final top 12. Now, I've removed Scott Wright, but I've kept Arfield.
Okay.
Just so Arfield could go somewhere.
Yep, that's fine. We should just do a middling list, just one Scott Arfield, that's fine.
In a position of his own, Scott Arfield. Number eight, to be fair, he could be high of a list of number eights who we've counted as attacking midfielders because they've played a lot as attacking midfielders this season, but probably aren't attacking midfielders. So it would be Scott Arfield, Ross Callaghan and Scott Pittman.
Yes. Yeah. Those were the ones I considered, but I just couldn't make the list.
Yeah. So, right, I've got the 12. So that means I've got 12 Matty Kennedy. At 11, David Witherspoon. At 10, Chris Burke. At 9, Scott Arfield. At 8, Ryan Hedges. At 7, Jamie McGrath. And this is when it really became hard to try and separate them. At 6, at 6, Joe Aribo. At 5, Ryan Christie. At 4, Yanis Hadji. At 3, James Forrest. At 2, David Turnbull. And number 1, Ryan Kent. Anything to argue with there?
No, I'm very laid back when it comes to this, but my Rangers fans only see two Celtic players in the top three. Raging.
There will be. They are the new Celtic. Whenever a team is on top, that's when you become the most paranoid. That's when you react at the slightest of things that you think is maybe slagging off your club. It happened to Hearts as well. The time the Hearts fans were the biggest conspiracy theorists was 2005-06. It's like when you're on top, you can't think that everybody's coming for you and you just naturally get paranoid. So Rangers fans had a sense of humour for years. That sense of humour's gone. Celtic fans have got a sense of humour now. They're growing it. It's growing.
Yeah. It takes time.
It does take time. A couple more years like this one and they definitely will have a sense of humour. It's maybe just my, when I say they've got a sense of humour, it's obviously I'm talking about Twitter. Like I'm not reacting with, like, well, obviously I'm barely reacting with anybody. It's fucking lockdown. Like, but I'm not like basing this off of kind of meeting people person to person. But I wonder if it's just to do with the fact that tweets, self-deprecating tweets and tweets slagging off your club in a funny way are the ones that are going to get the most numbers and probably going to do the widest circulation. So that's kind of where my kind of theory comes from. So it's not really based in real life, but it's certainly on Twitter. And I mean, let's not just dismiss it. Scottish football Twitter is a real place. It's a real place with some opinions and some characters. And it just seems to me that Rangers could have had, if the old firm Rangers had the sense of humour and Celtic were just so kind of so serious and ready to jump at anything that dared question their might. And it's just starting to change a little, this campaign.
Well, we'll get to that Ranger side when you put up this top 12 list and then tweet out the list as well.
You can put on no comments, can't you?
On Twitter, yeah, you can.
Yeah, I might do that. Right, thank you.
I mean, they can still comment and follow Chef.
As long as they're listening.
I'll be using my burner account for that.
Right, thank you very much for joining me, Joel. Thank you to everybody for listening. If you're thinking, right, hey guys, I would quite like to hear about the midweek games in the Premiership, because there was a lot going on there. Hampton Aki basically relegated for the top flight for the first time since they were promoted in 2014. Hibs clinching third place. Kilmarnock moving into the relegation spot in an absolutely bam-pop game against St Mirren at Rugby Park. If you want to hear about all that, we've got that. We've got that coming up later tonight. It's going to be Graham and Tom are going to be looking through the midweek fixtures. That'll be available on the Patreon for £2 a month tier. Yeah, that'll be up later tonight. But that's not all. That is not all. If you're also thinking, well, what about the playoffs in the lower leagues? There's lots happening in the lower leagues. We surely need to focus on that as well. We've got that covered as well. Craig Telfer, Sean McGuigan, and Fraser Clark will be joining forces together to talk through what's happening in the lower leagues, basically since across the weekend and into midweek. And
you'll need to start listening to that as soon as it goes up for you to be able to finish before the next lot of playoffs start.
Yes, I'm going to put that out on Friday morning, and that'll be on our £5 a month tier. So if you want to listen to both those, it's patreon.com/terracepodcast. And that's us. It's coming up for the final weekend of the season. Joe, are you saying thank fuck that it's almost over?
Oh yeah, man, I'm done with the season. Done with the season. Hibs are about to win the fucking Scottish Cup. I am fully done with this.
I'm actually starting to get kind of back in again. There was a real lull there where I was fed up with football. Like, just had enough, like, sick of watching on the house and that. But I think the fact that it's coming to summer, the fact that it's business end, there's a lot of big games going on.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. The fact that when I got told I'm going to the Hamilton Kelly the weekend, got a wee buzz about that. It's going to be good. There's a game that's got something riding on it. The playoff matches, I'm trying to get tuned into all of those because they are there. Playoffs, the commentators will say, oh, they're always nervy affairs. No, they just, I will just enjoy them. Although I'm not going to tune into Dundee Raith Rovers on Saturday night, because that is done.
So when do the next kind of loosen the restrictions come down? Is it the 15th?
It is on Monday.
Oh, it's Monday. Currently, are you allowed? Are you legally allowed to give somebody a lift?
Not sure.
And that's the end of the show. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you later. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.